This podcast is brought to you by the Self-Publishing Formula's Facebook Ads for Authors Premium Course. Registration opens on the 3rd of June for a limited time. Hello and welcome to podcast number 14 from the Self-Publishing Formula.
Two writers, one just starting out, the other a bestseller. Join James Blatch and Mark Dawson and their amazing guests as they discuss how you can make a living telling stories. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
Hello and welcome along. Yes, it's SPF podcast number 14 and Mark and I are quite excited. Can we say we're very excited about this week's podcast, Mark?
I don't think excited is strong enough a word, James. No. We're agog.
You're a professional writer. Come up with a better word.
Hang on.
Agog. Thesaurus.com. This is going to be our feature-length interview with BookBub. And, we're not going to preview too much because it's we got as many questions in as we possibly could, stretching our time. So we're not going to introduce it for too much. Just anything quickly to say. I know, actually, you've had a bit of a self-publishing literary celeb wedding this week, haven't you, Mark?
Yes, I just got back this afternoon from Nick Stevenson's wedding, which was wonderful. So Nick and his wife, Kylie, and Joanna Penn and her husband, Jonathan, were there as well with me and Lucy. So that was, it was a really wonderful event. Just lovely to have the three of us together talking a little bit of shop. Joe and I more than Nick, obviously. But yeah.
He didn't drag Nick across from his wife too.
No, he? I think he would have gone into an awful lot of trouble if we'd persuaded him to do that. So it was lovely to be there for that. It was a lovely evening and great to see Joe as always.
Well, that's really nice. And just goes to underline what a nice community that we all operate in. Okay, look, without further ado, let's get into this interview. So it's Katie Donnellan is her name, and we do introduce her in the interview itself. So we're going to let it roll and we'll have a quick chat off the back of it at the end. You know, I reckon it's publishing law that when two or three writers are gathered together, then they shall mention BookBub, whether it's to boast of their recent bump in sales or pour out their grief at being rejected. BookBub is a dominant force in both the indie and trad worlds, and we are delighted to be joined by Katie Donnellan. Hello, Katie. You've come from the traditional side of the fence, I think, Random House. And is this true? You are the third employee of BookBub, the first non-founder.
Yes, I actually like to say I'm the first, even though technically that's incorrect, but I'm the first non-founder and the third employee.
There should be some sort of plaque on the wall for that. Okay.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, look, Katie, as I said, everyone talks about BookBub. It's very difficult to have a conversation about book marketing without BookBub coming up, but let's assume there's some people who don't really know what we're talking about. Can you give us the 101 on BookBub before we get going?
Yes, absolutely. And first off, just thank you guys for inviting me to be here today. I'm really excited to be talking with you. So BookBub is a company. We still call ourselves a startup, although we actually launched in January of 2012. So we're now a little over 4 years old. We were founded by two men who actually came from outside of the publishing industry. So they were both sort of in the digital media space and entrepreneurs in the past. Our CEO actually founded two companies before launching BookBub. And they were actually helping a friend of theirs who had started a company that was producing ebook content. She asked Josh and Nick to help her try and market the content she was producing. And so they sort of jumped on board to help her with that. And soon realized basically that the publishing industry was missing a lot of the direct-to-consumer marketing tools that that they had used in other industries. So they decided to actually test out an email marketing service, and basically tried a sort of hacky version of BookBub to start off with, and it took off. So they essentially split off from this other company and launched BookBub. And what our core product is, what it has been for the last 4 years, is our daily email, in which we feature our featured deals, which are essentially price promotions that are submitted to us by authors and publishers. So they tell us about ebooks that they're discounting to $2.99 or below for the most part. And we have an in-house editorial team who curates all of the deals that get submitted to us. We get about 200 to 300 submissions a day. And our editors are picking the best around 15 to 20% to end up featuring in our email, which goes out to now over 8 million members who get our email every day. On the subscriber side, our readers tell us which categories they like to read and which retailers they buy their ebooks from. And their email every day will only show them books available in those categories and on those retailers for them to sort of browse through and click straight through to the retailer to buy if they so choose. So that's a quick summary of our core product. That's what's been around for the last 4 years. We are obviously working on other things as well, but that's sort of a top level overview of what BookBub does.
Yeah, that's great. And Mark, it's worth you just chipping in here, I think, and saying what BookBub means to an author.
Yeah, sure. Now I was slightly surprised. Then when I thought about what you just said, Katie, about how long BookBub's been around, and I suppose 4 years would be around about the time that I can remember it being a thing. And I think I was on board reasonably quickly, and BookBub seemed like it came out of nowhere with a big list straight away. So I think you'd been building the list kind of in cloaked mode for a little while, and then and then decloaked, and everyone was like, "Oh my god, this new platform is around and is very, very effective." I think I was reasonably early to get on board, and one of I had lots of experience with other email service providers, and generally quite good. But I mean, BookBub came along and immediately right out of the gate was super effective. So I can remember I don't know how many I've had now, probably 15 or 20 over the course of the last 4 years. But every time you get one lined up, it is very exciting because you know that you're going to get rocket fuel poured on your book, and you're going to shoot up the charts. And you know, I've been in the top 10 in the US before on the back of BookBubs. I've had long tails, so you know, by which I mean people will buy the book that I'm advertising, then they'll buy the rest of the series, and I can see that as a measurable metric over the course of the next 2 or 3 weeks. So it's been fundamentally important for getting me into the position where I am. Still very competitive, and I still get turned down. I think I've been turned down three out of the last three, which after I had five successful ones in a row, and now three knockbacks. But I'll keep applying because they're just so good.
Yes, you should keep applying. I'm sure we'll talk about that. But
yeah,
I think we told you, Katie, that we've been inundated actually with questions for this particular podcast, and I know we're going to talk about quite an exciting announcement as well shortly. But let's just deal first of all with that question that Mark mentions, and I think people will be heartened to hear that even Mark Dawson is rejected occasionally by BookBub. But it is the number one question people ask: is why didn't you select my book? I know you've got quite a lot of information out there on the selection criteria, and I think the clue is 200 to 300 submissions a day is probably the major clue here, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, I would definitely say that's the major clue. And you know, I would also say that we do try and publish sort of as much content about the selection process as we can, because I know that it's the most common question we get as well. But I do actually think that sort of talking to authors about it has always been the most effective way to sort of explain how it works and why we do it the way we do. So I'm happy to kind of rehash things here. I think definitely, obviously, one of the most important factors is that at this point we just get so many submissions, which is great. I mean, we love getting so many submissions, of course, but essentially the one of the core problems is that we often have authors say, why don't you just run more books? Which seems sort of like an easy solution to the too many submissions problem. But, you know, I think one of the reasons that Mark can say such kind things about the BookBub product and why authors continue to want to work with us is because we've really tried to prioritize making sure that the promotions stay effective, and that running a BookBub feature deal really does sort of yield the results that authors are looking for with their marketing. And to just add dozens more books to the email would sort of have a potentially very negative impact on the individual promotions themselves. And that has been a core tenet of sort of BookBub's business from the beginning, both on the editorial side, on my team side, which is the team that works with partners and with authors and publishers, and also on the consumer marketing side in terms of the kinds of readers they're sort of looking to get on the list. But essentially, the selection process is competitive because we get so many submissions a day. And I'm happy to sort of get into as much detail as you guys want. But essentially, what our editors are doing is looking for the books that are most likely to perform well with our readers. And, you know, obviously, that's in our best interest, but it also happens to be in the best interest of our readers and our author and publisher partners, in that, you know, if a book performs well for us, that's because tons of our readers are buying it. And obviously, that means it's performing well for the authors. So the things that sort of play into that selection process are, you know, yes, we have a bunch of minimum requirements that I don't think it's worth going over here. They're on our website. Aside from that, our editors are, they're looking at sort of the platform of the book, meaning reader reviews, critical reviews, the author's sort of platform in terms of bestseller lists or, you know, accolades they've received in the past. And they're looking at historical performance, meaning if we've ever run that author or that book before, the editors are looking at how the author or that particular book has performed in the past. And the last thing, and I think the thing that that usually is sort of eye-opening for a lot of authors, is that they're looking at sort of the content itself. And we, you know, we at this point have tens of thousands of books that we've run to our readers. And our editors are looking very closely at the performance of each of those books relative to other books that we're running in the same category. And what they notice, given that we have all of this data, is trends, obviously. So, you know, on a certain list, like historical fiction, for example, there are sort of dozens of different types of historical fiction we could run there. And some of them are performing really well right now, and others aren't performing really well. So we take that as a sign that our readers are looking for, you know, for example, World War II tends to do really well with our members in historical fiction. And they're not looking as much for, you know, biblical history or whatever other type of fiction we could be running there. So when our editors are sort of given the choice between two great books, which they almost always are, they often make the decision based on sort of what sort of subcategories and genres seem to be performing really well with our readers recently. So, you know, I always like to say, and I know this can be frustrating for authors, it really is sort of always worth continuing to submit, Mark. So you should definitely keep submitting those books, because it really comes down so much to what other books are being submitted to that category at the same time, and also what's trending on the list at that time. So, you know, it could be that the content of your books hasn't been doing well for the last 4 to 6 weeks, but next month it will be doing really well. And so if you resubmit, it could have, you know, it could have a much better chance of being selected then. So, as frustrating as it can be, we really do always recommend that people continue to submit. And I promise that is not just to make authors go crazy filling out that submission form every month.
which is a lot better than it used to be. That's
oh, yeah. Good. Okay. That's good.
Much, much better. just as a kind of a cultural question. So, I mean, BookBub, you're in Boston, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. If I was to go into BookBub HQ tomorrow, say, would I consider it to be a kind of a data-driven environment or editorial-led environment? What's out of those two things that you mentioned, which one has precedence most often?
You know, I actually sort of love our company because I think it's both. I would say that we're probably more data-driven, but our books are hand-selected by humans, so. I think of it more as a model that is editorial. We do have people choosing the books that end up in the email, but they are supplied with like vast amounts of data to really help that decision. And we're definitely a culture in which when you make a decision, we sort of have data to back up the reasoning for the decision we made. So it's not. As a lot of things are in traditional publishing, it's not just the historical fiction sort of gut feel about a book, and they happen to really love that novel. That's not really a rationale that we would use to choose a book. It's based a lot on data, but it is a human choosing it at the end.
Okay, there's a couple of questions just to throw in here from our SPF community. Michael Rowley asks, "Who are these editors, and how do you find them?"
Yeah, that's a good question. Our editors are—they're definitely from mixed backgrounds. We have a team of—I don't know the exact number, but somewhere between 5 and 10 editors at this point. And they—they They come from different backgrounds. We have a number of editors that come from a traditional publishing background, or they've worked at an agency before, or they write themselves. They usually tend to be sort of heavy readers in the genres that they're sort of responsible for selecting for. But you know, we hire them as we hire anyone else in the company. We have an extremely rigorous hiring process here where people go through multiple rounds of multiple hour interviews. We give them exercises, we give them sample selection tests to run through, and we sort of, you know, critically evaluate everybody that applies and sort of choose the best editors we can.
A few questions, Katie, on the genres. So I guess the people who don't find themselves fitting in easily to the existing way that you've segmented the list are always wondering whether you're going to expand that. So Doug Dorrow asks, will you be going wider, advertising, offering readers things like new releases, novellas, and things like that? And I'll just link that in with Jay Falconer, who asks whether you're going to add a new category or two, such as dystopian, post-apocalyptic, which seems to be quite hot at the moment. How much do you think about that and widening the segmentation of the list?
Yeah, so I'll answer that kind of in two parts. The additional categories in the daily featured deals email is something that we are always thinking about. The way that we launch new categories, it can happen in a couple ways. One is if we have an existing category where one subgenre is consistently underperforming on that category. So I like to use the example of paranormal romance here, even though this happened like 3 years ago now. We originally had one romance category, and paranormal romance just like never performed well in the general romance category. So that was actually one of the first subgenres of romance that we split out into its own list, because we knew obviously there's demand for paranormal romance. We had tons of authors looking to run paranormal promotions with us, but they just like weren't holding up on the general list. So we launched paranormal romance on its own, and now that list has existed for a really long time and does really well. So that's one way. The other way that we can launch new categories is if we just sort of say, okay, you know, we think we should launch a dystopian category or one of the other ones that the author mentioned. What we will often do is actually add that to our readers' sign-up page during the sign-up flow, and basically see how much interest we get from readers on when they're signing up. So if we have sort of a critical threshold at which we consider there to be enough demand from readers to launch a new category, and there have been categories in the past that we've added to the sign-up page, like sports romance was one we tried recently where the sign-up rate from our members just wasn't high enough to justify launching a dedicated list for that category. So again, very data-driven, although we do come up with you know, ideas for new categories. That's a human. So but basically we test new categories all the time. And when we see enough demand, both from readers during that sign-up test process, and also obviously we need to get enough submissions from authors and publishers to sort of justify launching the list on its own.
So just to kind of go spin back a bit. So let's say you decided tomorrow to do a dystopian subcategory. Mm-hmm. How would you go about building that list? So obviously, yeah, you, the flow would change so that you'd include a question that said, are you interested in dystopian fiction? How would you then start to attract readers who have an inclination toward that?
Yeah, so that's actually also something that we've done in different ways over time. So we recently split our mysteries category. We originally had one mysteries list into historical mysteries, cozy mysteries, and crime fiction. When we launched those three subcategories, we actually just auto-subscribed any members that had been signed up to the original mysteries list to all three of the subcategories and allowed them to opt out of whichever ones they weren't interested in over time. When we launched paranormal romance back a few years ago, we actually looked for members who had opted into both romance and fantasy and subscribed the ones that overlapped in both categories to the new paranormal list. And when we launch a new category, like I think we recently launched business or history, we'll actually just start that clean, add it to the sign-up page, and new members have the option to sign up when they join BookBub, and old members can sort of add it to their list of categories when they go back and edit their profile. So actually, the way that we have members join a new list, it really varies depending on the category.
So let's go back one step beyond that. So this is a question from Lakshmi Haraharan, who and I'm interested in this, so I think I know what the answer might be, but is how do you build your list? So how is, sure, back in the early days, how did BookBub build such a big list?
Yeah, great question. So we have a whole team at BookBub which is dedicated to, they're our consumer marketing team. Again, I think it's a 10-ish person team. And they spend their days basically looking for members. In the early days, a lot of BookBub subscriber acquisition was done through paid advertising. And that's still a big component of how we find new members. I would also say that now we have some number of millions of Facebook fans and tons of Twitter fans, and we have like a much more viral presence now. So we also get a ton of word of mouth signups for new subscribers as well. Some of the strategies that the marketing team use are, so in our paid advertising, they use sort of, you know, typical paid advertising channels like Facebook and content marketing and, you know, Google, various types of ad platforms that you can use. But the thing that I find super fascinating about our consumer marketing team is how much analysis they do about the quality of the subscribers they're getting from each of those channels. So, you know, if we test out a new marketing channel and discover that the readers we're acquiring from that channel are not sort of as engaged or active as a typical BookBub subscriber, we actually will stop marketing on that channel because we'd rather acquire members who are going to be engaged and actually buy the books we're featuring than just sort of add emails to our distribution list. And then some other less non-paid channels that we use are obviously social media. And then we've also launched a reader blog, which is not the partner's blog, but is just the BookBub blog, where we do a lot of content marketing on there and sort of find readers in a more organic way where they're coming to the blog and signing up there.
Yeah, that's very sensible, and that's something that I'd recommend to all writers is to keep an eye on the health of your list. Obviously, not everyone's going to have a million, tens of millions of strong list like BookBub does, but the principles are the same. So if you've got people who aren't clicking or aren't opening emails, there's not really much point in paying to have them, either to continue to acquire them from that source or to have them on your list. It's better to get rid of them, which just actually raises, I'm just trying to find who left this question, but so apologies, I can't find the name now, but someone asked how often BookBub kind of spring cleans or purges its lists.
Yeah, you know, I actually don't know a detailed answer to this question. I think we do it, there's some kind of system where like if somebody hasn't engaged with the email in a certain amount of time, we'll unsubscribe them, I think. But the other thing we do now is actually offer a weekly subscription. So if people sort of try to unsubscribe from the daily email, we see if they just want something less frequent because we know there are people out there who don't want an email every single day. And another thing that we now offer members who may not want an email every day is to just follow specific authors and get dedicated emails when that author either has a deal or comes out with a new release. So we do have some sort of alternate ways for readers to opt into BookBub emails without getting the email every single day.
Okay, so that was from Monica Burns, that question. So that's interesting. This kind of goes back to something that was mentioned earlier. This is from Seller Lyons, and she says, in order to better serve BookBub's customer base, would you consider a new release or launch promo for series that have already been featured and have a good record with download sales, etc., or by authors their subscribers are following? So that's a relevant question for me. I launched a book last Friday, did really well, but I would have loved to have been able to juice it with a BookBub push beyond the kind of the automated email out to my followers. Is that something that you've ever thought about?
So again, I will answer this in a few ways. So in the featured deals email, we historically have featured very few new releases. Typically, the reason for that is because when authors submit a new book, it usually doesn't have the platform number of reviews, sort of reader feedback that would make it competitive with other submissions we're getting for that category. So typically, they just need to be out for a little while to get enough reviews to make them competitive. That said, so we have our new release alerts now, which I think are awesome as long as authors have sort of claimed their profile and are and we're able to sort of drive new followers for them, because that's just a free service that we now offer authors, alerting their readers to their new books. And the other way that that we are now sort of hoping to work with authors on new releases, and I'm like maybe jumping the gun here a little bit, is with the product that we are announcing soon, the BookBub Ads product. So I don't know if we want to go down that road right now, but essentially that's sort of the way that I'm thinking we will soon be able to be working with authors on their new release launches
I think it's as good a time as any. Let's talk about BookBub Ads. So I know that Mark has been on the inside of this, hasn't he? So do you want to explain, perhaps Katie, you explain the top line of what this is and how the product's going to work, and then we'll hear from one of your keen beaters.
Yes, absolutely. So quick intro to ads. Some authors signed up to the email may have seen this new product. We've been sort of beta testing it for a while, which is why Mark knows about it. But it's basically a new placement that is appearing at the bottom of the BookBub daily email. It's a standard banner ad unit, so it's a 300 by 250 display ad that shows up at the bottom of the email. We have introduced this unit because for a few reasons. One is the daily email itself, as we've been talking about here, is a product where we are fairly limited in both the number of books we can run every day and the types of books we can run. So as I just mentioned, we feature very few new releases. We don't feature any full price books, of course, because price promotions are the focus of the product. We can feature novellas. We don't feature multi-author box sets. We don't feature samplers. So there's a lot of content that doesn't work in the existing email that we would actually love to help our partners promote. And the other reason is because, as we've been talking about, because our selection process is so competitive and we have a limited number of spots in the email, we actually aren't able to work with as many authors and publishers as we would like to work with and who want to work with BookBub. So this new product, BookBub Ads, is essentially a way for authors, publishers, any sort of book marketing professionals to reach BookBub's audience with to promote, advertise book-related content of any kind. So you can promote new releases, full-price books, again, multi-author box sets, novellas, any type of book-related content. The product is it's self-serve, so authors and publishers will be able to go in and set up their own campaigns. They can design their own creative. And the product is very distinct from featured deals in that it is an auction-based advertising platform. So there may be questions about this depending on how familiar authors are with platforms like Facebook or Google Ads, but it's essentially a platform where you can set your own budget from $10 to $10,000, however much you want to spend. And you bid the maximum CPM you're willing to pay for impressions in the ad product. And you end up competing against other advertisers on the platform for the readers that you are targeting. The last thing I'll throw in here, and then Mark, you can jump in, is that I'm really excited about some of the new targeting options that are available with the ads product. So we have the same targeting by category or retailer or region that we offer in featured deals. But on top of that, advertisers can now target BookBub readers interested in a certain author. So if Mark was running an ad campaign for a new release, he could target BookBub readers interested in himself, or BookBub readers and or BookBub readers interested in any other, you know, comp authors that he thinks would be a relevant audience for his own book. And that audience includes not just readers that have followed those authors, but readers that have expressed interest in those authors in any way on the BookBub platform, whether it's by clicking on a featured deal or looking at the book page for one of that author's books on our website or whatever it is. So it's a targeted list of readers who have expressed interest in a certain author.
Yeah, so I mean, I've been testing it for a couple of weeks, and the good news is it's very, very effective. As you described it, Katie, it's very, very similar to Facebook mm-hmm. ads at interest targeting. So one of the things that we advocate, or I advocate for people who are getting into Facebook advertising, is this the kind of the entry level, which is very effective, is to target fans of other authors who are writing similar stuff to you. So what BookBub has done is opened up another avenue for allowing you to get to readers who you can reasonably assume are warm towards, at the very least, the kind of genre that you're writing in and possibly the kind of book that you're writing. So I've been testing it quite extensively, and I'll give you the kind of the top line figures because I think they're worth mentioning, and then I'll just tell you a little bit about who I've been targeting. I've spent over the course of the last 14 days $3,087.31 but that's brought in $3,980.66. So that's a return on investment of 28-29%. Awesome. And on some days, yeah, it's great. I mean, some days it's been over 100%. Typically, it's over 50%, and you know that's good. I mean, it's difficult to argue with those numbers. It's anytime you can spend one and get two back or 150 back, you keep investing in that. So, I've used the kinds of I suppose the entry level targeting. So I haven't gone after genres so much because I think. My experience in Facebook ads is that the more you lose focus, the less effective those ads are going to be. So the best one, unsurprisingly, has been to advertise against myself. So send those ads out to people who, as you say, Katie, have clicked on, at least interacted with one of my BookBub ads previously or followed me or whatever. And those have been really, really effective. But also, other authors. So I often kind of sharing shelf space virtually with people like Lee Child and David Baldacci, James Patterson, that those, they're obviously not selling anywhere near as much as those guys, but I know there's crossover there and those ads have worked really well. So, it's a very successful test and this is a tool. I'm really excited to see how you continue to roll this out.
Yeah. And I'm so excited to hear that someone who I know Mark is very sophisticated in your advertising campaign. So it's really exciting to hear that you're seeing such good results. We definitely have been working on this product with the intention of making it, sort of flexible for authors based on the type of campaign they're running and what their goals are. So for us to hear that your goal was to run an ROI positive campaign and you've been able to do that is really exciting. We're very happy to hear that. The other great thing about ads is that if you really want to run a branding campaign and you're not as focused on ROI, it's easy to scale this and you can just run it to, if you want to just target a genre, ROI will be harder to achieve, but you can reach, potentially millions of members in a short period of time to sort of do a big branding campaign as well. So we sort of designed it with the goal of allowing authors to design their, do a strategic campaign based on their goals.
Yeah. Or launching, you could do. And I've been advertising a box set, which always converts well. I mean, I'm sure that's the case with featured deals.
Definitely,
on BookBub.
Yes.
it certainly works on Facebook ads. That's what I would advocate typically, but I'm starting to test out a 99-cent single book. So we'll see how that performs. And it would certainly work with launches if I'd got my act together in terms of getting the creative ready in time.
Right.
I would definitely have run some ads last week just to juice the launch a bit more.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of questions. Just the first one may be a bit dumb. I don't know if I quite understood this. So you have an email list, obviously segmented and very subtly nuanced in the way that you distribute the emails. When you have the advertising product, that doesn't work down the normal segmenting lines. You can actually attach different advertisements to different individuals within particular segments. Is this a complicated system like that?
Yeah, it functions very differently from the featured deals. So we've built a whole separate platform for the ad product. I mean, it shows up in the same email, but when you buy a featured deal, you're essentially buying a guaranteed, I will be included in an email to this many members on the Sci-Fi list. Whereas with ads, what's happening is every time one of our members opens an email, we'll serve an ad to them. It's sort of like a live auction. Right. So the platform will just show them whichever ad has bid the highest for the targeting that sort of they fall into, essentially. It can be it can be fairly complicated to explain. And I definitely expect there to be some confusion between the ads product and our featured deals because they do function very differently. But yes, you're right. It's we're targeting by individual user and the sort of buckets that they fall into rather than just reaching all the members on a certain category.
As a kind of as someone who has a lot of experience in this kind of area, it's a very impressive product to take. The interface is clean and easy to use. I've had readers have emailed me independently to say that, how did you, I just saw you advertised on BookBub down the bottom of the email. They've taken screen grabs and sent them to me, which is great. So I know it's working. There's some kind of bumps, the small bumps, things that could be improved in terms of how the stats are relayed. It's a little bit slower than it could be, but that's to be expected at a beta stage. So it's all going to get ironed out.
Katie, the primary difference, I guess, here that people need to obviously understand is that you're not pre-selecting in the same way the ads are, it's your choice to advertise as opposed to waiting for you to go through the criteria with the main body of the email. However, I'm assuming you do have some criteria here, some sort of rules of engagement for advertising.
Yeah, so it's exactly. You're totally right. The main difference is that there is no editorial selection process. So as long as your ad meets our sort of terms of service or policies for creative, it's fine. I mean, we do definitely reserve the right to sort of remove creative if it's violating those policies. We obviously have, you know, like we're hoping to avoid running offensive creative of any kind.
Sure.
We're currently open to advertising book-related content, so it has to be relevant to an audience of readers. The other things that we're currently restricting are campaigns that are advertising specific to drive signups to a specific mailing list. So that policy is sort of, I don't know how much it will change over time, but for the time being, the creative can't say like sign up to X email list just because it's potentially competitive with the BookBub product. So other than that though, it's really open. And again, it's in beta. So a lot of this stuff is, I don't want to be too constrictive here because, you know, as you roll out a product, we learn more, we get more feedback, we understand the types of ads that maybe won't work and those policies could change over time. But for the time being, it's pretty open. As long as it's book related, we do review the creative that comes in. And if anything looks particularly egregious, we might pull it. But otherwise it's great. It's really exciting because there isn't a selection process. It doesn't have to be discounted. So authors will just have so much more flexibility to reach our audience with sort of things that they are prioritizing.
So I'm pretty sure that our listeners are going to be very, very excited about this. So it's in beta at the moment. So there is a wait list, I think. So what's the kind of the process from here on out?
Yeah, absolutely. So the process is, if you're interested in working with us on ads, there is a form on our partners blog, which you can find on the BookBub partners website. It's just bookbub.com/partners. If you go there, you can enter your information into this form that basically says, I'm interested in running an ads campaign, and you will be added to our sort of BookBub ads wait list. The reason we have a wait list is because the product is in beta, we have a lot of technical work to keep doing on the platform. As we've just been talking about, we've built an entirely new product here. So there's definitely still work to be done, as Mark said. And currently we actually just like aren't equipped to handle, you know, hundreds of partners on there. So we want to start sort of collecting interest from members. We want to start finding out about what types of advertising campaigns they run and are looking to run, to do some market research on our end. And once you've added your name to the wait list, we will be rolling out in sort of buckets or groups as fast as we can based on how quickly we're able to scale the product.
Great. I mean, I think that's something that we'll revisit, Mark, when it's definitely worth a podcast by itself. Some of the alternatives to the major social media platform advertising. It'd be interesting to hear some of your results when things have settled down a little bit and yeah. Some of our community as well.
I would love to do that. And I also think that we're going to have a lot of room to do sort of education. I mean, from what I can tell thus far, there's a huge range in how much experience our author partners have with platforms like Facebook, the auction platform on Facebook. So, as we mentioned earlier, it really can be quite confusing. So I would love to do something where we can ask questions about, you know, we're obviously going to be publishing a ton of blog content about best practices, but I'm happy to do another one where we talk about what's the most effective targeting and how to accomplish various types of goals, et cetera.
Great. Now, that would be really good. Yeah. I mean, obviously the huge advantage you've got for our audience here is you are a list of readers, and you know, the Facebook is great. There are hundreds of thousands, millions of readers there, but there are also lots of people who like tractors and aeroplanes and everything else.
Yes.
And finding your way between them is obviously the trick. Okay. Well, that's great. New products, exciting new announcement. We'll definitely revisit it in the future. If you don't mind, Katie, we're going to crack on with some of the other questions as well that we had in advance. So a few questions on geography, I noticed. So Patricia McLean, Linda Wilcox, I think Christy Rose as well, I think maybe all asked about geography. So things like what are the main differences you see in terms of success between the US and the UK and India and Australia? Whether you notice particular genres working better in different zones. Another question, was whether you could select more than one territory more easily. I think somebody, I can't remember who it was, but somebody said that they wanted to be included in Australia and the UK, but couldn't select and only had the UK to go with.
Yeah, absolutely. So our international expansion has been very interesting. I'm not sure where the specifics of the selecting various regions question, but I'll just sort of outline how the process works now. We actually recently combined our international regions into an international bundle. So when you submit to BookBub now, you can tell us you can either run a US only promotion, an international only promotion, or a worldwide promotion. So we actually no longer, you basically have to sort of buy all the international regions together, which currently includes UK, Canada, India, and Australia. Once you sort of opt into the international bundle, you can opt out of specific regions if you don't want to include them, but the bundle itself is just a flat fee. So if you're running a worldwide promotion, you're sort of paying for all of the regions. And if you want to opt out of a specific one, you can, though we definitely encourage our partners to run in as many regions as they can during their promotion. For the differences in between regions, I would say that I think there's definitely room for us to evolve in terms of how we're customizing content by region. And I think that sort of answering the differences between regions question can be a little challenging, because a lot of the differences boil down to category specific, you know, tropes that don't work particularly well in certain regions. Like, for example, cowboy romances don't really do as well outside of the US as they do in the US, which is probably not surprising. But I think there was also a question about covers specifically, and we definitely do see, especially between the US and the UK, there are definitely different cover tropes in those two regions. Unfortunately, we don't currently have the ability to run a different cover in the UK edition. So that's another area where we could make some incremental improvements to our international regions for sure.
Okay, you just prompted a question that I had that I hadn't actually noted down. In terms of covers for box sets, what do you find converts better, 3D box sets covers or flat 2D covers? Put you on the spot a bit there.
Yes, in terms of conversions, definitely 3D. We have some admittedly fairly complex policies about what covers we are able to run for which kinds of box sets. But I would say that if you are running a deal with us for a box set of full-length books, definitely run a 3D image. They convert better.
Okay. Yeah, I thought you might say that. So Michelle Maddow asks, BookBub gives an amazing spike in sales. I just experienced it yesterday. But how does one keep the momentum going after the BookBub ad is complete? What would you say to that?
I would say run a BookBub ads campaign. So that's one way that I'll be answering that question moving forward. I think there actually will be really exciting opportunities to test sort of extending the price promotion and continuing to advertise either to different categories or the same categories after a featured deal, and or advertising the book at full price to different categories, or the next book in the series at full price to the same category. So there will be a lot of opportunities to do that in ads. I realize that her question was not about ads. So in terms of other strategies after a featured deal, the advice we typically recommend to our partners is to, first I should say, there's always going to be a spike and it will always be a spike. I think it's unrealistic to assume that the sales momentum will continue at the rate that it does at the top of the spike. That said, obviously the ultimate goal is to have sales settle back down at a rate that was higher than pre-promotion. And we think some of the best ways to do that are to essentially make it as easy as possible for readers who have either discovered you for the first time or read the book that they discounted, that they bought through the featured deal, to move on to another one of your books. Or on the other hand, if you're marketing that specific book, just make it as easy as possible for them to share that book with other readers. So we're big advocates of using back matter, of honestly collecting email addresses and using your own mailing list. But essentially you want to make that process of, especially if you're doing like a series promotion or something, you know, when you discount a first book in a series with us, we have a lot of data around the fact that discounting a first in a series is far more effective. making it free is far more effective. We see 8 times the sales of other books in the series during the promotion when the first book is free, as opposed to being 99 cents. And when you can include a link to the next book in the series in the back matter, we see a 3 times higher increase in sales of the rest of the series after the price promotion, when there is a link that leads the reader right to the next book in the series.
Yeah, okay. That's good. That's good to know. Just as a kind of a follow-up to that, so free is still effective for you. And there's some kind of chatter on some of the boards that 99 cents is as effective as free is now. So I mean, BookBub obviously is the best place to comment on that. What's your view on 99 cents against free?
Yeah, you know, a lot of my pricing advice is really based on the specific partner's goals. I think both free and 99 cents can be extremely effective price points. We see 10 times the downloads of free books that we do of 99 cent books. So in terms of like volume of eyeballs, if you're going for maximizing the number of eyeballs, free is definitely the way to go. And I think that for series, I really do believe that first in series for free is still an incredibly effective marketing strategy for many of our partners. On the other hand, 99 cents can work really well if you're trying to drive revenue from the actual promotion. Obviously, it's easier to do that way. Although I will actually say that we have a lot of partners who tell us they make more money on a free promotion as long as there are other books in the series, because the follow-on sales are just so much higher. So I'm obviously a big proponent of free, but we of course run tons of 99 cent promotions that are really effective as well. The one other caveat I'll add in here is that, just going back to the selection process for a second, if there are any authors listening to this who are having trouble being selected and they're submitting for 99 cents, I will say that our editors review free books sort of in a separate bucket, and it can often be easier to be selected for a free promotion than a discounted promotion. So if you're willing to give free a try and you just listen to all the super compelling reasons to do so, I would encourage you to try submitting for free.
Okay, a couple of quick ones, then another question about genres. So the quick ones, I think they're going to be quick. I don't know. Alex Nichols says, any plans to expand into French language? And Tony Butowski says, any plans to expand into audiobooks?
Both of the short answers to those are not in the immediate future. French, I think we have more room to sort of expand into additional English language come to countries before we do French. But it's something we definitely have on the sort of eventual roadmap. For audiobooks, this is an area that I sort of personally would love us to get into. We haven't sort of cracked how to do so effectively. The audio market doesn't at the moment lend itself particularly well to sort of replicating the featured deals model for audio. So it's not something we can just sort of add on to the existing product, but it is something that's sort of also on our radar. And I would love us to get involved in audio at some point. So not a super satisfying answer, but
okay, there's some hope there for Tony Butowski. Okay, a couple of questions from Angela Reyes and Demelza Carlton, who both asked the same thing, and I can see why they're asking it. Which genres do you have the most trouble filling, and which ones are overpopulated with applications? I like their thinking, because they're obviously going to write a book now to fit into the least competitive genre.
okay. So it's a little hard to say. This really fluctuates a lot. I would say trend-wise, though, romance has always been by far our most competitive, and that's sort of for all the subgenres of romance. So we definitely get a disproportionate number of submissions to the romance categories. I think potentially unsurprisingly, a lot of our smaller, newer categories end up being the ones where we're sort of looking for additional submissions. So you know, in sort of like chick lit or LGBT or time travel romance. Well, sorry, time travel romance is not true, because I'm sure we get a ton in there. but some of our smaller lists are the ones where we are sort of always looking for more submissions. But again, this actually really does fluctuate from month to month. You know, for example, in October, we get just like a ton of amazing horror submissions that we really wish that the horror authors would spread out throughout the rest of the year. Right. So horror authors, you can promote your books in months other than October.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does actually fluctuate from month to month.
Okay, so a couple of questions, similar theme from Andrea Domansky and Alan Spade, who want to know about the mix between spots for trad publishing and indie publishing. Do you have percentages allocated? Does that move? Do you see it moving in the future?
We do not have percentages allocated. Books from traditionally published authors or publishing houses and self-published authors go through the exact same editorial process. And they, like, who they're coming from does not factor into the selection process. So we don't have like targets that we're trying to hit every month or percentages that we, you know, or dedicated spots for trad books versus indie books. We do, we have had a balance between the two of about 50-50 for sort of as long as I can remember now. Definitely not the earliest days of BookBub. We absolutely started working with independent authors, and they were by far the earliest adopters of BookBub. But, you know, for the past, I would say at least a year or two, it's been about 50-50. And that's actually a breakdown that we're very comfortable with. We are not sort of actively trying to push it in one direction or the other. I think if we saw that percentage change dramatically in a certain month, we would definitely investigate and sort of figure out why. But we're actually really comfortable with an even mix of books coming from both sides of the marketplace. You know, we really just want to be featuring the best books in the categories that we have, sort of regardless of how they're published.
Okay, I've got one from Lakshmi Hariharan again. So she said, this is quite a good one. Who do you think your main competitor is?
Yes, that is a great question. I think that there are two ways to look at this. For the featured deals product itself, there are obviously a number of other services that do the same thing that BookBub does. And those are sort of natural conclusions for who our competitors are. I think we have a few advantages over a lot of those, one being scale and another being that we are retailer agnostic. But I think that sort of overall, the direction we see BookBub going in is more of a sort of discovery service generally than a price promotion specific service. So when we think about the future of BookBub, we think of our competitors more as any service out there who is sort of helping readers discover content, basically. And I would say almost on an even bigger scale, we think of our competitors as phone games or like apps, any other entertainment apps out there, because really what we want to be doing is sort of capturing the attention of readers and have them, you know, get a book from BookBub and read it rather than playing Candy Crush or I don't even know what the new like trendy so yes, I would say like book discovery platforms and almost more on a greater scale, sort of any sort of entertainment service out there.
So you said it's platform agnostic, which obviously it is. I mean, the kind of ultimate agnosticism would be to actually start selling books yourself. Is that something that BookBub has thought about?
You know, our featured deals product, I think of as a great price promotion specific discovery tool. And I think what we ultimately decided was there was so much more room in the discovery space specifically for us to help authors and publishers market other types of books. We just really feel like there's a big opportunity to continue kind of evolving on the discovery side of things, both for readers and authors and publishers. We see a lot of exciting things we can do there before we even contemplate. We've decided not to go down the retail direction.
I was going to say, you mentioned funding. So you've obviously, that there are VCs involved in BookBub now. So what do you think, what are the odds that BookBub will be bought out in the next 5 years?
I do not know the answer to that in the next 5 years. I would say that we, again, see like a really big opportunity for other things we can do. It's like so hard to look 5 years in the future at a company like ours.
Yeah.
I think in the next like couple years, it's unlikely that we would get bought out, because we really are sort of digging into the products we're working on now. And we, you know, it's going to take us a while to get them right. And I think we really want to invest in that.
I suppose cool. a sort of halfway house on the selling would be some form of subscription model. I guess you've considered that and considered it in the same way that you have retail as not really an option for you, but it would seem a natural commercialization of your list to offer a premium subscription service where you a bit, I guess a bit like Kindle Unlimited or something like that with people submitting their books
and yeah, getting a percentage. That is an interesting other idea that I like, honestly I don't see us pursuing it in the near future, so
no it works so well as a list in its own right. You kind of don't want to tinker with it too much, do you? You want to work on the bits that are working well, which is I guess expanding the genres and making sure that you're feeding the voracious appetite of your readers, and that's at the heart of this. We're talking about writers a lot, but I'm thinking about all these thousands of people who just consume book after book. I mean, we know romance readers are particularly voracious, but I think quite a lot of the other genres as well are. We should give our thoughts tonight to all the readers, which is us as well, of course, but a huge part of your business.
You know, you're absolutely right. And I've definitely been focused on authors here because that's who we're talking to. But I would also say that really from the beginning of BookBub, readers have been the focus of how we design the product and how we've built the business. A lot of the decisions we've made about, you know, not just adding more books to the email and not just acquiring a bunch of email addresses really quickly are because we really are focused on making the experience like so great for the reader. That really is our focus, because we think as long as we have a list of highly engaged readers who are buying books all the time, that inevitably makes the product sort of more valuable to our author and publisher partners as well.
Great. Okay, we've been through. I'm sorry if we didn't get to your question directly. I think we've pretty much covered all the topics that were brought up. I'm going to end with one final question, which is going to bring us back to the beginning and allow you to repeat something you said at the beginning. And it's from Sean McGuire, who says, after how many attempts should I give up applying to BookBub?
Don't give up. Don't give up. You absolutely should not give up. I totally understand that it can be very frustrating for authors. But we really, because of what I said earlier, timing plays such a role in the selection process that it is not in your best interest to stop submitting. And if you're getting super frustrated, maybe you could just space out your submissions.
There you go.
Give yourself a couple months to not submit and then try again.
Good. And on that hopeful note, I wanted to bring it back full circle. Katie, it's been an absolute pleasure and fascinating talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on. I think we may have a date in the future to talk more specifically about advertising and how that's working for you and how it will work for authors as well. But we'll let the product bed in a bit, I think, for a bit, and then maybe you can come with some data that will be helpful.
Yes, that would be awesome. I would love to do that.
Well, Katie was absolutely brilliant, Mark. I thought it was really interesting listening to her, and it was good of her also. She answered quite a lot of the questions that I know they get asked a lot, and I know they've got stuff on the website, but as she says, you know, it's better when people hear her saying it than reading an FAQ on a website as to why you know, your book may have been rejected, and I thought it was really interesting and hopefully really helpful for people.
Yeah, exactly. And we had loads and loads and loads of questions that came in, and we asked as many of those as we could. And that it was really good to get Katie to talk about the new ads product that they're offering. And as I said in the interview, my initial feedback on that is that it works very well, like 50 to 60% return most days on those ads. So really useful to get her to describe it. And as we'll take her up on the offer, come back and see how things are getting on in the next 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, I mean, that's right up our street, really, isn't it? And I'm pleased BookBub have done it. It's a slight change in direction for them, but it's been interesting hearing people feedback on Facebook, having been on the receiving end of them, because, of course, lots of writers are on the BookBub list one way and another to get recommendations for reads. And a few of your ads have popped up, I noticed, to some of our community.
Yep, I've had several, and my readers actually as well have noticed them and sent screen grabs of the emails that they've got. So yeah, I know they're getting through, and I know that they are generating sales. So first impressions are very good for this one. I'm quite impressed.
Good. And again, it just goes to underline the fact that I know some people think, oh, you know, Facebook advertising is becoming saturated or whatever. There's only too many people on there, which is nonsense, really. The returns are still very good. And there are more and more platforms of a similar ilk opening up. I've been really delving into YouTube advertising over the last few weeks and had some really good breakthroughs in the last week or so. So that's definitely going to be a platform we're going to talk about a lot in the future and hugely underutilized. And BookBub, get in early. Be one of those trendsetters who makes the most of it in those early days, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And just on the subject of Facebook ads, we would be remiss if we didn't mention the fact that the course opens again for new students. They're only the third time we've offered the course. On Friday, the 3rd of June at 10 p.m. UK, 5 p.m. Eastern time. So I haven't completely nailed this down yet, but I think what we'll be doing is I'll be doing a Facebook Live Q&A around about 9:30 UK time, so 4:30 Eastern, and then we will tick around to for half an hour, and then we'll open the course up, and you know, happy to take questions on that next week. Or of course, you know, people can email us, leave comments on the page, and we'll get to as many of those as we can.
Yeah, we're really excited about onboarding our next clutch of students and having the journey with them as they enter the exciting world. And you know, every time we do it, we get this crop of amazing stories from people. One of those stories, who's a guy who onboarded last time in the autumn of 2015, Adam Croft, it's changed his life, absolutely changed his life. And that is our next podcast, probably going to be released next weekend and Saturday, Sunday, something like that. But certainly not one to miss. And that's about it. So we'll say goodbye from the recently sunnied Mark Dawson and the stuck inside, not invited James Blatch.
Exactly. Yes. See you next time.
You've been listening to the Self-Publishing Formula podcast. Visit us at selfpublishingformula.com for more information, show notes, and links on today's topics. You can also sign up for our free video series on using Facebook ads to grow your mailing list. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. We'll see you next time.